Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hour number two of our broadcast. I want to follow up on a story that we have brought to you. And this is a very sensitive kind of story to address for a variety of reasons. I mean, we're talking about a human being here. We told you about Phil Haney and his death. Phil Haney, who was a whistleblower. And we have some new information that's come out as well. There was a news release that was issued. There were earlier statements that there was a kind of definitive kind of message put out, the death being ruled a suicide, and they seemed to kind of backtrack on this. Unfortunately, there was misinformation immediately being put out that we have determined Mr. Haney's death to be a suicide. This is not the case. We're currently in the beginning phase of our investigation. Any final determination as to the cause and manner of Mr. Haney's death would be extremely premature and inappropriate. That is the message. It ends, no determination will be made until all the evidence is examined and analyzed. So the reports were that Mr. Haney suffered a single self-inflicted gunshot wound. Those were the initial statements that came out of the sheriff's office. I first learned about this particular story from a man who has been on this program before as well as Mr. Haney. And this is not just about the country, about politics, and about policy. There's a very much a human side to this, and that's why I asked Ryan Morrill to come on this broadcast. Welcome back, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Before we get into any of the investigation, any of this other stuff, tell me about Phil as a human being.
Man, he was a special guy. So he's obviously is most known for being a Department of Homeland Security whistleblower who was really persecuted for doing that, and you know, at great risk. So he had great bravery, just an unrelenting patriotism, the type that just infected you, you know, if you came across it. Just, he made you love America more just by talking to him. But then there's this whole other side to him where he was just intensely interested in your own well-being, of everybody you ever met, regardless of whether he even agreed with them or not. You know, there were people that if he had a difference with, it just didn't matter. They're human beings. So you try to take care of them. And would always call to check in on you. And when you would try to divert the conversation back to him, he wasn't interested. He wasn't interested in talking about his personal self. He wanted to make sure that you were okay. And that's the type of guy who he was. And for me, my relationship was less of like a friendship and more of a mentorship. And he would call me and just to kind of tell me, you know, I just want you to remind you that I consider you to be my son. And he would just sense, I guess, my lack of communication or whatever, that something was going on in my life that he didn't know about. But he would pick up on that.
That is pretty amazing. The events of the past few days here, what's your initial impression when you first heard this story that he was dead? And at the time, the initial reports, a possible self-inflicted wound.
He drives me crazy because Phil was so particular about documenting everything and preparing everything. He was not impulsive, like the least impulsive person you'd ever meet, and extremely devoted faith and wanted to be an example to other people, and knew that there were a lot of people that looked up to him. They had an audience. It wasn't just about himself. And so the idea that he could commit suicide, it makes me think, if he could be brought to that point by whatever it was, if that's what happened, then all of us can be brought to that point without any notice. I mean, there was just no indication, truly no indication, that his mindset was that depressed. He's been through whatever he was going through, if this was a suicide, had to pale in comparison to what he's been through previously. I mean, he had to worry about being prosecuted in the Department of Homeland Security, basically being harassed there. He lost his wife, who he loved dearly. He lost his father last year or 2 years ago, and I know that he was feeling depressed then, but charged through. And when I talk to people that know him, nobody has any indication of anything that happened to prompt this change of behavior, aside from some health issues that were going to be taken care of that are very common.
And I understand that he was engaged.
Now, what is odd is that among people I talked to, none of us, I certainly didn't know about that. But that was because he tended to, in my talks with him, he wanted to take on more of the father role rather than just like, hey, this is what I'm up to. I'm seeing a certain woman who I'm falling in love with. Like, he wouldn't really go there. It was just a different type of relationship. But among those that were his best friends, at first they thought that was just not true. And now we've heard from enough people that it was true. Why we didn't know about that, I don't – that boggles my mind. Because he was not a secretive person. Like, he was just very open about how he was feeling, what he was doing. We'd be on the phone with you for a long time. So that's just another element that's just confusing. I don't know that it's relevant to the case at all, but it's just confusing.
As you know, we're talking with Ryan Morrow, and one of the things that immediately erupted, and I'm sure you're aware of this in social media, immediate speculation based on all that's gone on with Phil Haney, with the Department of Homeland Security, suggestions that, and all kinds of conspiracy theories floating out there. How do you react to those?
I understand the immediate reaction because I assumed it had to be a murder. And then when I heard of suicide, they're saying it was suicide. I was like, no way. No way. He's the last guy. No way. But I think when you consider how devoted Phil was to the truth and to data and to specific facts and not jumping to conclusions, that we owe it to him to just wait. Just wait. Don't start jumping and spreading conspiracy theories in the hopes of getting a huge number of retweets on Twitter. Don't start trying to be the guy that is going to break some story about this. Just let the police do their work. And let's get some real facts before we all start speculating. It's just premature to say. It really actually bothered me to see certain people. Their immediate reaction was to say, Phil died, so this proves what I was saying about the deep state or the Obama administration, or this shows I was right about this conspiracy theory. Like, there's a time to just kind of shut up.
Yep.
And that time
Ryan,
is
Ryan, this is why I so appreciate you. I get it. I am completely there with you. Are you okay to – do you have the time to hold on with us just briefly for one more segment here? Because I wanted to touch on some of the things that Phil was concerned about. Are you able to do that?
Sure. Yep.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with Ryan Morrow. We're talking about the death, mysterious death of Phil Haney, Department of Homeland Security whistleblower, and we'll continue that conversation after the break. Stay with us. Back in the broadcast – we've been having a conversation with the director of the Clarion Intel Network, Ryan Morrow, and we've been discussing the very sad death of Phil Haney, the DHS whistleblower. And the thing I wanted to turn to now is I read previously that Phil may have been working on another book that would possibly be released this spring. Was that your understanding as well?
Yep, that is true. It was going to be called National Security Meltdown, and it was going to basically be an extension of his first book. And his first book chronicled his time working for the Department of Homeland Security and seeing how Muslim Brotherhood-linked individuals were influencing the process and the overall dysfunction that he saw, and how the Obama administration officials had basically cleansed a lot of the databases because they said being part of an extremist group doesn't mean you're necessarily a terrorist, and so you can't collect records and store records on that basis. So he had all these big revelations in the first book. My understanding from talking to him is that the next book wasn't going to be as explosive as the first. I mean, it was going to basically say, here's what has happened since then with a lot of open source research and documenting from his expert point of view the Islamist issue with the U.S. government ever since he left the Department of Homeland Security. So, frankly, based on how it's been described to me, I don't see an additional incentive for someone to want to target him if they didn't before. I mean, if you were going to target him, when that first book was coming out, that was the time.
So you think, and this kind of bolsters the comments you made earlier, that you are not inclined to go down the line of conspiracy, that sort of thing. Ultimately, what's the legacy of Phil Haney?
For the public and for the sake of national security, I mean, whistleblower doesn't really do justice because he was such a subject matter expert. Just so dived into the data. It wasn't just that he saw misconduct and reported it. I mean, he was a very decorated, basically intelligence operative. The way that he contributed to FBI counterterrorism cases, put together these very important databases that could have stopped terrorist attacks like the San Bernardino attacks that happened if they were used properly and not delayed. He made a profound impact with all the research that he did and bringing it together. That could have changed the course of history and saved a lot of lives. And then after that, just having that subject matter expertise and advising folks like myself and going into the media and telling the story of what happened, a story that probably would not have come out in such great detail if it wasn't for him, about the dysfunction in the national security apparatus. I mean, he has a place in history. I mean, that's the legacy. And then, of course, as I mentioned earlier, there's this whole other legacy of him as a person. But for the general public, what he did was remarkable because the media really did brush off this notion that the government wasn't taking groups like the Muslim Brotherhood and Tablighi Jamaat and all these other groups seriously, that there are these serious errors in how we were handling the radical Islamic ideology. And he came out and just blew out the water and said, no, all of that is true and explained in a way that you could never refute in his book how serious of a problem that is and then how to correct it in the future.
Well, Ryan Morrill, Clarion Intel Network, thanks a lot for joining us on the broadcast. And our condolences to you with the loss of a friend. And we certainly wish you the best and look forward to talking with you again. Hopefully under much more pleasant circumstances. God bless you, man.
All right, God bless you. Thank you.
We continue the broadcast, and we will continue to follow this particular story and see what happens with the investigation. I do think it's interesting that they've kind of moved away in the investigation from being so definitive about a self-inflicted wound. Another person here, and there are a lot of, I'm really not going to share a lot of these texts because there are things that we've talked about and read about and speculated about so many different things, and frankly, several different people. You know, I think the thing that, and I mentioned this the other day, that most of the time people's thoughts immediately turn to the Clintons. I mean, it's really unfortunate that this is where we are in this country, that there is such a suspicion to the point where we really think somebody would do something like this. Am I saying I think that they're beyond this? No, I'm not, because I have the same kind of questions you do. But I also very much want to honor the spirit of what Ryan has communicated here, because I do agree with him. Let's wait and see where the investigation goes. If it is lame, if it is in many ways like the Vince Foster investigation, then, yeah, there will be a point where maybe there's an opportunity down the road we challenge what has been released and the information that has come out and say, well, hold on there. But let's give the investigation some time and see what the outcome actually is. Coming up, we're going to talk about the debate. In fact, we're going to play some audio from the debate before we go to break. I just thought this was great. I've told you my favorite parody site is Babylon Bee. You see the new one they've come out with? Russians declare election too chaotic for them to successfully interfere. I've been saying this for quite some time. Why do the Russians even need to bother? I mean, we've got so much chaos and so much idiocy, especially on the Democrat side right now. What could the Russians possibly do to help and make this any worse than it already is? Here's Babylon Bee's take on this. The Russians were excited once again for a U.S. presidential election in which they could interfere to sow division and discord. But their excitement soon turned to dismay when they found an election already too chaotic for them to follow. Alexei Teplov, a Russian backer, said this: "Everyone's ready to tear each other apart in the Democratic primary. It seems like if we tried to add any more chaos, it would just be a drop in the ocean." Teplov described how any time they tried to get people to turn against each other, it was always overshadowed by a grassroots campaign to do the same thing. And then there's Trump. I mean, the guy is already so unpredictable. I felt like I'm trying to smash things with a sledgehammer while a tornado is around me ripping up buildings. Evil leader of Russia and interferer of elections, Vladimir Putin, agreed. In our wildest ambitions, we never would have tried to get a straight-out communist to win the nomination in a major U.S. party. I don't know how we're supposed to interfere and add to that. Putin actually hung his head sadly. It's like people don't even need a Russia anymore. Isn't this great? These guys over at Babylon Bee, excellent writers. This is good stuff. And it's so true. Here we are. I mean, they have to be laughing over at the Kremlin. Can you imagine? They've got to be sitting over there watching. Well, wait a second here. We've got one of our own guys over there who's winning the primary. What do we need to do? We can sit back and relax, have some vodka, caviar, whatever it else we want to share right now. I don't know. Coming up, we'll listen to some highlights from the debate and get your thoughts about how things went. Also, if we don't get to it today, we're going to talk about another attempt at amnesty by Republicans. And I can also tell you, it's close to home. Stay with us. Now back on the broadcast. Yesterday evening, did you watch the debate? The Democrat candidates? I don't know. Maybe these are the candidates actually for the Socialist Party. By the way, I think it's Florida. Did you see that there's a lawsuit underway? There are voters who are trying to sue to keep Bernie Sanders off the ballot because they say he's not a genuine Democrat. This is getting better and better by the moment. Let's listen to a compilation of some of the highlights of last night's debate.
But I really am surprised that all of these, my fellow contestants up here, I guess would be the right word for it, given nobody pays attention to the clock, I'm surprised they show up, because I would have thought after I did such a good job in beating them last week that they'd be a little bit afraid to do that. I think that Donald Trump thinks it would be better if he's president. I do not think so. Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States. And that's why Russia is helping you get elected, so you'll lose to him.
Hey, Mr. Putin, if I'm president of the United States, trust me, you're not going to interfere in any more American elections.
I'm hearing my name mentioned a little bit tonight. I wonder why.
I have opposed authoritarianism all over the world.
What I said is what Barack Obama said in terms of Cuba, that Cuba made progress on education. Yes, I think, really? Really?
Yes, literacy
programs
no
are bad. What Barack Obama said is they made great progress on education and health care. That was Barack Obama.
And I am not looking forward to a scenario where it comes down to Donald Trump with his nostalgia for the social order of the 1950s and Bernie Sanders with a nostalgia for the revolutionary politics of the 1960s.
My Secretary of Education will be someone who has taught in public school. My Secretary of Education will be someone who believes in public education. And my Secretary of Education will believe that public dollars should stay in public schools.
I come at this with a great deal of humility because we have had a lot of issues, especially when it comes to racial justice and policing in my own community. And I come to this with some humility because I'm conscious of the fact that there's seven white people on this stage talking about racial justice.
And I know that if I were black, my success would have been a lot harder to achieve. And I know a lot of black people that if they were white, it would have been a lot easier for them. That's just a fact, and we've got to do something about it than rather just demagogue about it. Let's just go on the record. They talked about 40 Democrats. 21 of those were people that I spent $100 million to help elect. All of the new Democrats that came in, put Nancy Pelosi in charge, and gave the Congress the ability to control this president, I got them.
The fact is, here's the deal. I'm not out of time. You spoke over time, and I'm going to talk. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. We've got to deal with the institutional racism.
Thank you, Vice President. Mr. Vice President.
I know how you cut me off all the time, but I'm not going to be quiet anymore, okay?
Mr. Steyer.
Prevent North Korea from launching missiles to take them down, and if we don't, why am I stopping? No one else stops.
Okay. Okay, sir.
Here's my Catholic school training. 150 million people have been killed since 2007 when Bernie voted to exempt the gun manufacturers from liability. More than all the wars, including Vietnam, from that point on. Carnage on our street, and I want to tell you, if I'm elected and I'm coming for you and gun manufacturers, I'm going to take you on and I'm going to beat you.
We have to acknowledge that we should be renegotiating the New START Treaty and the other arms negotiations that must happen. This president just likes to do tweets at 4 a.m. in his bathrobe, gets out there, and doesn't achieve the results we need. I would meet with him, but I would do it with our allies. I would have clear deliverables, and I would achieve those deliverables.
At least I didn't have a boss who said to me, kill it, the way that Mayor Bloomberg
never said that.
Have said to one of his pregnant employees. People want a chance to hear. People want a chance to hear. From the women who
I never said that.
Senator Warren, that is a very serious charge that you leveled at the mayor.
Yes.
You told a woman to get an abortion. What evidence do you have of that?
Her own words.
And Mayor Bloomberg, could you respond to this?
I never said it. Period. End of story.
If we spend the next 4 months tearing our party apart, we're going to watch Donald Trump spend the next 4 years tearing our country apart.
Look. Oh, my goodness. You know, one of the things that blew my mind, the irony. You're Elizabeth Warren quoting this person who was apparently accusing Michael Bloomberg of suggesting to her that she kill her baby. From a woman who advocates the killing of babies. What is this woman? Delusional? I mean, all of a sudden, I'm supposed to believe that she's concerned about babies. I mean, really? The hypocrisy. How can this woman do that with a straight face? It's because these people have no conscience. None of them do. This party has thrown conscience out the window completely. I've told you about this once before. There's a scripture that talks about how people's consciences can be seared. As in burned away. That is what you are looking at right now with the modern Democrat Party. They have no working conscience anymore. Which takes us back to the beginning of today's program and what we mentioned about the Born Alive legislation that 41 Democrats blocked. because they don't want to protect a baby that may survive an abortion. They are so committed to abortion and the right to murder babies that they're willing to let a baby die. And frankly, I think they ought to be made to watch. Go watch.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
You know, then again, what difference does it make? Because it probably will not affect them at all. So what? That's a choice. It's not a baby, right? God help this country. And I'm serious when I say that. I'm not just saying that as an expression. That we have even a percentage, a sizable percentage of people in this country who find any measure of wisdom on that stage. There is none. They're all bloodthirsty socialists, every single last one of them. And one of them is an outright commie. Texter says she didn't say she was concerned about babies. She said Bloomberg wasn't. Big difference. You know, that is scary, but you're absolutely right. My goodness. Burn, baby, burn. The wheels coming off the Democratic Party. Unbelievable. Time for Bill O'Reilly. Back on the final stretch of the broadcast. And it's time for us to venture down to our upstate studio to good friend Lonzo as we take a look at the day in history. How you doing today, man?
I'm excited.
Well, I'm glad you are excited. As we begin in 1870, New York City opened this 312 feet long. 312 feet long. And actually, this never got used anywhere else. Their current transportation system is nothing like the original one. What was it that was originally put together in 1870 and started running?
Wow, I'm confused.
Transportation.
Yeah, I know. So it's a vehicle or a bridge?
Neither. Okay. Well, it would be in the vehicle category. Well, not, and it's not even a vehicle. It's a whole system. How do you travel in D.C. and New York and at some airports and
conveyor belt?
Oh, you're so close. A subway.
Yeah.
In fact, this person set up a 312-foot-long pneumatic subway, and this prototype has never been used anywhere
else. See, what's throwing me off was a 312-foot.
I know. That's why I'm saying they ended up coming up with a much better model. So I am glad they did, because I wouldn't want to ride around in a pneumatic tube. Anyway, 1919, this national park is established. It is built around a really magnificent part of the West that is so scenic and you will probably never go to.
Grand Canyon.
You are correct.
I could drive there.
Listen to him. We have Robert Watson Watt demonstrated the, well, I'm trying to not tell you what this is, but it's what people are afraid of who are driving cars like yours when you're on the highway. What is it that the Highway Patrol is able to use to catch people like you?
Well, the people like me are afraid of slow people. That would be radar.
It would be radar. Radio detection and ranging system.
Hey, get on my way.
Radar. First demonstrated by Robert Watson Watt in 1935. 1993, unfortunately, this killed six people, injured over 1,000. This was the first attempt to take down this particular facility in New York.
World Trade Center.
World Trade Center bombing, 1993. 2012, this is the not-so-smart guy shot and killed Trayvon Martin following an altercation in Sanford, Florida. What is his name?
Oh, man.
Very very forgettable personality.
Yeah. Oh, I don't remember.
His name is George Zimmerman.
Yeah.
George Zimmerman.
George.
Have a little fun here. If you were to guess, after the Super Bowl performance, how many complaints do you think have been received by the FCC? You want to guess?
This year's Super Bowl?
Mm-hmm. Halftime show.
Ooh. I'm going to go 25,395.
I want to go with maybe 60,000.
60,000. All right, Bill Jones, you may as well jump in here on this, too.
I wasn't wondering.
I mean, what are your thoughts here?
I was thinking way higher, 500,000.
Are you serious?
Yes.
How about 1,300? They've only gotten 1,300 complaints. Families all over America, as you know, watch that Super Bowl halftime show. And afterwards, these 1,312 people decided to type up some letters, complaints of people who had something to say. The singers dancing on poles, twerking, belly dancing. And a few sexually suggestive gestures. How dare they?
Doing whatever that thing was that Shakira did with her tongue. I'm not quite sure what that was. It was interesting.
Hard to replicate,
You found
too.
That very interesting, huh, Alonzo?
It's like, is she having a seizure? What's going on here? I don't know.
I better move away from this really quickly.
Did you rewind it and watch it again and again to try to figure it out?
Figure out what.
Well, you have to, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, 20, 25 times, something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Some of the complaints sent to CNN by FCC officials came from parents who felt their children were exposed to a porno show. Other adults thought the show encouraged sex trafficking. Some people were upset no public warnings were given before the show, which one viewer said was less a musical act than an X-rated strip club performance.
Here, what were they expecting? Seeing
hello,
who it was.
Yeah, tell me about it. Here are just some of the complaints. Not appropriate for children. Many parents were left fuming after watching the show with their kids. Nearly half of the 1,300 complaints mentioned the halftime show was inappropriate. Jennifer Lopez's performance at the Super Bowl halftime show is extremely explicit, completely unacceptable for an event where families, including children, are watching. This was a Utah viewer. I had to send my children out of the room so they weren't exposed to something they should not have seen. This, my family, very excited to watch the Super Bowl tonight. However, I was not prepared to explain to my 11-year-old daughter why Jennifer Lopez was dressed so scantily and why she kept grabbing her crotch. My daughter was asking if she was feeling sick from having so much skin showing. let's see. There's also this. The halftime show was very sexual in nature. I've never seen so many sex poses outside porn magazines. They also complain about sexy tongue wagging and butt shaking. There's that sexy tongue wagging you're talking about there, Lonzo.
I think it had something to do with electrocution. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Do you still have that video, by the way? Still maybe. On your DVR?
Maybe.
I'm just curious. We're out of time here. Have yourselves a great day. Take care.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.